As you're settling in, I'm going to ask that you would go ahead and turn to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel, we're going to continue, actually. We started last week in 1 Samuel chapter 1. Chapter 2 is where we're going to be, starting with verse 12. And it fits perfectly, actually, with where we're at for this challenge for today. So I love how the Lord works that out. 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 12. I've entitled this message, What Matters Most? What Matters Most? And you'll see where we're going with this here in a second. So if you've already found 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 12, say, what? All right, this side's got it. Awesome. We're going to go ahead and start with verse 12. Now the sons of Eli, and by the way, their names are Hophni and Phinehas. We saw them in the first chapter. And so now where we're at is we're moving forward to hear a little bit about these sons. What you need to know is that they state this in chapter 1. They were priests. They were priests. They were part of the priesthood. Their dad was a priest. They were called the lineage of the priesthood. And they're actually labeled as priests in chapter 1. It says, now the sons of Eli were worthless men. Wow. Man, what a place to start, right? But it explains why. They did not know the Lord. These were priests who did not know the Lord. The custom of the priest with the people was that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servant would come while the meat was boiling, with a three-pronged fork in his hand, and he would thrust it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All that the fork brought up, the priest would take for himself. You see, they were making sacrifices for everyone else, and so they didn't have their own animals and stuff, so they would come in, and this was how they would receive their food as part of the whole process. But they're supposed to stick the fork in, whatever comes out, that's God's way of saying this is what you get. It says, but this is what they did at Shiloh to all the Israelites who came there. Moreover, before the fat was burned, the priest's servants would come and say to the man who was sacrificing, give meat for the priest to roast, for he will not accept boiled meat from you, but only raw. And if the man said to him, let them burn the fat first and then take as much as you wish, he would say, no, you must give it now. And if not, I will take it by force. So basically what they're saying is, we don't like the way that you're making it and you're not doing it fast enough. We want it now. Does that sound like anything you hear in our culture today? That was a question. Does that sound like anything that we see in our culture today? It's not fast enough. It's not exactly the way I want it. You didn't do what I asked you to do. That's not how I want it, even if it's how it's supposed to be. Thus, the sin of the young man was very great in the sight of the Lord. And here's why. For the men treated the offering of the Lord with contempt. Now, you're about to see a major contrast. Samuel was ministering before the Lord. Do you see the contrast? Just in that one small sentence, he had on, it says, a boy clothed in a linen ephod, just the simplest of clothes. On this end, we have Eli's sons, who are supposed to be priests, who are doing whatever they want, whenever they want, I don't care what the rules are, I want it my way. And then on this end, you have the sweet presence of Samuel, who's ministering before the Lord, which, by the way, is what they're supposed to be doing. Well, it doesn't end there. So if you would go down to verse 22 with me. Now Eli was very old. He kept hearing all that his sons were doing to all Israel, and how they lay with the women who were serving at the entrance to the tent of meeting. And he said to them, why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all these people. No, my sons, It is no good report that I hear the people of the Lord spreading abroad. If someone sins against a man, God will mediate for him. But if someone sins against the Lord, who can intercede for him? Now listen to this. But they would not listen to the voice of their father. Students, children, look at me real quick. Look at me. I want you to hear me, children. If you will not listen to your parents, you won't listen to the voice of God. Now listen to me. God has placed parents, grandparents, whoever your guardian is, they've placed them in your life. Look at me. They place them in your life so that you can understand what authority is. And if you won't listen to the authority that God put in place, how is it that you think that you're going to hear the voice of God? It's part of the process. We learn to obey our parents. Children, obey your parents. And if you obey your parents, guess what? There's a blessing that comes with this. Parents, you can pay me later. It says, but they would not listen to the voice of their father, for it was the will of the Lord to put them to death. Now listen to this. Now the boy Samuel continued to grow, both in stature and in favor with the Lord and also with man. Contrasting, another passage, contrast between what's going on with Eli's sons, the ones that are called to be priests, and then here's Samuel. Go on to chapter 3. Starting with verse 1. Now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord in the presence of Eli. I'm going to go ahead and give y'all a heads up. I'm going to read through the majority of this passage. When we get to the end, I'll go quickly through my notes like I did last week. And we'll wrap things up. Okay? Sound like a plan? Now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord in the presence of Eli. And the word of the Lord, get this, was rare in those days. There was no frequent vision. At that time, Eli, whose eyesight had begun to grow dim so that he could not see, was lying down where? In his own place. He was in his own place. Listen, there's some major symbolisms that are going on in this, but they kind of speak for themselves. First of all, Eli is, he's not only physically blind, but he's starting to lose his spiritual sight as well. How do we know that? There was no frequent vision. The voice of the Lord is not being heard, and there's no frequent vision that is occurring. And he was lying down in his own place. Now, the lamp of God had not yet gone out. And Samuel was lying down. Listen to this, y'all. Was lying down in the temple of the Lord where the ark of God was. Here's what you need to know about where Samuel was. He was right up against the presence of God, as close as he could get to the presence of God. Because the ark of God, it was known in that day that God's presence resided above this ark in the most holy of holy. And Samuel's like, I'm going to sleep there. And can I tell you, each and every one of us as believers, we should want to be as close to and in the presence of God as can I get a translator? We'll make that spiritual. Come on. The point is this. We should want to be in the presence of God all the time. And have the power of God all the time. Man, we should be drawing up to God as much as we can. But you know what we do? We just kind of go to our own place. Do our own thing. And that is not God's will for your life, and it's not God's will for my life. And what's the difference between Eli's sons and Samuel? The difference was where they were at, what they were doing, and how they were doing, and why they were doing. They were pursuing two totally different things. And we can learn from Samuel and his desire to be in God's presence. It goes on, it says, then the Lord called Samuel. And he said, here I am. Now remember, the voice of the Lord was rare. But Samuel was, he was pursuing the presence of the Lord. So he heard the voice of the Lord. Hello? And it says he ran to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he said, I didn't call. Go lie down. So he went to lay down. The Lord called to Samuel. Samuel arose and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he said, "I didn't call. My son, lie down again." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, meaning he hadn't heard this voice before, and the word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. He's calling out to him. He's saying, "It's time for us to have a relationship. I want to talk to you." By the way, Samuel's name is heard by God. Samuel's name is heard by God, and Samuel is hearing God. Does anybody want some of that? I mean, his name, basically, in essence, he's showing us the prayer life that we should desire. Now, Samuel did not yet know. Okay, moving down to verse. My numbers are tiny, but I think that's 8. And the Lord called Samuel again the third time, and he arose and went to Eli. "Here I am, for you called me." Eli perceived that the Lord was calling the boy. Therefore, Eli said to Samuel, "Go lie down. If he calls you, you say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant hears.'" So Samuel went, and he lay down in his place. Now, here's what's going to happen. The Lord's going to speak to Samuel. He's going to tell him that Eli and his sons are rejected. Go down to verse 15. Samuel lay until morning. He had just heard that Eli and his sons are going to be rejected. And the Lord's going to do a hard thing. And it says, Samuel lay until morning. Then he opened the doors of the house of the Lord. And Samuel was afraid to tell the vision to Eli. But Eli called Samuel and said, "Samuel, my son." He said, "Here I am." Eli said, "What was it that he told you? Do not hide it from me. May God do so to you and more also if you hide anything from me of all that he told you." So Samuel told him everything, and he hid nothing from him. And Eli said, "It is the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him." Now look at this. Verse 19. And Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and let none of his words fall to the ground. Anybody want some of that? And all Israel from Dan to Beersheba knew that Samuel was established as a prophet of the Lord. And the Lord appeared again to Shiloh, at Shiloh, for the Lord revealed himself to Samuel at Shiloh by the word of the Lord. So what is it that we can learn? What's the lesson in this? Well, I've had some time to really pray over it and consider it this week, and I think the biggest thing that I want us to take away from this is that holiness is so much more important than happiness. Ouch. We don't like to talk about happiness, and we don't want anybody to say, you know, some of the hard things when it comes to happiness. But here's the truth. Holiness is so much more important than happiness. And for us to understand that, let's kind of break down the difference. What is holiness and what is happiness? I'm reading a book right now called The Pursuit of Holiness. I don't suggest it to anyone because it's too painful. But if you would like a painful experience, that I really think is a blessing because, I mean, it just strips you down. And you are laid bare before God. This is the book, one of those books to do that. It's called The Pursuit of Holiness by Jerry Bridges. And in it, he says this: holiness is to be separated from sin and therefore consecrated to God. So separated from sin, consecrated to God. In essence, you're seeing Eli's sons. Everybody look at me real quick. You see Eli's sons, and then you see Samuel. Well, Eli's sons were basically set apart from God, and Samuel was set apart for God. You see that? He was set apart to God. He was consecrated because he was pursuing holiness, but Samuel's sons were not pursuing holiness. They were just like, you know what, just whatever makes me happy. The word signifies separation to God, but it also ties together the conduct befitting those who are separated. So it's not just be separated to God, it's also act like it. Yay, right? Don't just say you're separated to God, but actually let your conduct prove that. Now, on the happiness side of things, the scholar Ian Barclay, he kind of explains this thing of happiness. So bear with me as I read this. Happiness is not a biblical word at all. Let me just stop there. I'm like, okay, I'm listening. I'm leaning in. Let's see what this means. Happiness is not a biblical word at all. He says it is derived from the root to happen. Clearly, what happens to us will affect our happiness. It's outside circumstances, happenings will affect our happiness. But I love this. Joy, on the other hand, and listen, joy, on the other hand, is a fruit of God's Spirit and is not affected by good or bad happenings. Joy is not dependent on our circumstances. It is dependent, as we ourselves need to be, it is dependent on God Himself who dwells within us. Joy comes from within. Happiness is what's going on outside of us. Does that mean that God has an issue with us being happy? No. Does it mean that God's number one priority is your happiness? No. He desires that we live a holy life. That's what He desires. And sometimes we'll have some not so happy days, right? Because the happenings are awful. But can I tell you, it's in those times where the Spirit of God inside of us can well up a joy that could only come from a supernatural presence. Are y'all chewing on this, or are you just giving me a mean look because? It's something to chew on, isn't it? So let's give an easy definition. I went to Our Daily Bread, because you can get your easy definitions there. So happiness depends on happenings. Joy depends on Jesus. Boom. Drop the mic and walk away. That's easy to understand, isn't it? Happiness depends on happiness, but joy depends on Jesus. And you and I get to choose. Are we going to pursue happiness, or are we going to pursue holiness? We get to choose. What's your number one desire? Is it to be separated to God, or is it to be separated from God? Here's what I hope. When we leave this place, that we'll accept the challenge and we'll say, you know what? Holiness is so much more important than our happiness. And that we will choose, you ready? We will choose holiness over happiness every time. Every time. So I'm going to give you some examples. I know you're going to like this. Are you ready? I'm going to give you some examples. Let's just go to you're driving in your car. Can we start there? Because everybody loves these examples, right? Happiness versus holiness. Now let's just take it and let's put this thing in the car. But let me share with you a little story from this last week. I was cut off by a belligerent woman. She was a belligerent woman, all right? So she cuts me off. My daughter's in the car. Ashley's riding with me. And she cuts me off, so I have to hit my brakes. I slam on my horn because she needs to know I'm there. So it's like she didn't even know I was there. So she pulls in front of me. I have to literally almost stop to let her in front of me. Well, now she's mad because I blew my horn. So she slows down. By the way, I saw her car in the parking lot. This story's for you. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't. I wondered. I just thought, how awesome would it be if she showed up at church? Yeah, take that. Belligerent woman. Did I say that part? She cuts me off. She slows down. I'm like, oh, no, you didn't. So I pull out to go around her, and I look over. I kid you not, y'all. She has an entree in her lap. I mean, she's got a dish with food in her lap, and she's giving me the "you're number one" with her other hand. I'm like, what are you driving with? Her teeth? I mean, she's telling me I'm number one. I'm like, look, we're number one. Yeah, so I just got to get past her. So I take off, get past her, and then there's a stoplight. So I hit the down arrow on my window, because that's what every good believer is supposed to do. I hit the down arrow on my window, and my daughter says, "Not today, Daddy, not today." "Would you please not today?" So I hit the up arrow. Pull up beside her. She intentionally catches and gives me eye contact and is doing this. It's the bobblehead. Have you ever seen it before? So I looked at her and went, it's the right thing to do. Just loving on her, right? Just light turns green. Somehow, that woman got in front of me again. I don't know how. Traffic just, and she gets in front of me, and then she slows down again. So I go to go around. I kid you not, she pulls in front of me and starts playing NASCAR with me. I'm like, bumper cars, Jesus, bumper cars. Have you ever wanted to do that? Be honest. Okay. You know what would have made me happy? Oh, there's a lot of things that it would have made me happy. Matter of fact, the truth of the matter is, I'm using this moment to vent this because this is therapy for me. Happiness versus holiness. We get to choose. And so she finally pulled off, and I thought to myself, she's going to kill somebody. Lord, protect everybody else on the street that has to deal with that belligerent woman. Ever been there before? Oh, you were the person. First of all, don't eat an entree when you're driving down the road. That doesn't make any sense. But no, I'm thinking to myself, you know, there's situations like this all throughout life. Hey, let me give you another traffic. You're sitting in traffic and you're in a hurry to get somewhere. You're in a hurry to get somewhere and you're bumper to bumper and you're at a standstill. Where does our mind and our heart go? It goes to how we're being inconvenienced, but there's a possibility that there's someone up the road who's lost their life. See, it's just a different mindset. It's a different way of dealing with life. It's a different way of looking at things. And we're called to live the holy, be holy as I am holy. That's what the Lord tells us, to be holy as I am holy. And can I tell you, we can't do that on our own. You don't know how I know that? Because I thought about that woman for 2 days. I lie, I'm still thinking about her today. But that's because it's not in our nature. We just want to make ourselves happy. But happiness is not God's number one pursuit for you. He does desire for you to be holy above all else. And even when all of your happenings give you a situation that's not something you can necessarily be happy in, you can still have joy that wells up inside of you because the Spirit of God lives inside of you. And those will be the moments when others will look at you and go, "I don't know how in the world you're doing this." And you say, "I'm not. He's doing it in me and through me." And that's the challenge that I want to send out to each one of those graduates. But I want every single one of us to take a moment and see if we can accept it. And the challenge is, will you choose holiness over happiness every time? You say every time, that means perfection. No, I'm saying that's your pursuit. Is every time I'm going to be thinking, is this the holy thing to do? Is this what Christ would do? Is this how he would live? Can I tell you, look at me, he's the perfect example of this. Hanging on a cross for you and for me, beaten, spit on, hanging from a cross, it was not a happy moment. But he considered it pure joy to face trials of many kinds. And when he hung from that cross, he said what I couldn't have said. Father, would you forgive them? Because they have no idea what they're doing. Father, could you forgive her? Because she had no idea what she was doing. Father, can you forgive him? He had no idea what he was. Father, forgive me. That's the example that we have in Jesus. So I'm going to ask that the students would come forward, and they'd come forward with their families. And as they're coming forward, I want to talk to you, everybody else who's going to be sitting there. And students, go ahead and start coming forward. We're going to line you up here, and we're going to pray for you. But as they're coming forward, I want to ask who out there would accept that challenge. You would be willing to say, I will raise my hand today and I'll accept the challenge to choose holiness over happiness. Is anybody with me? Anybody willing to do that? Come on, raise your hands if you're willing to do it. Raise them up because we're going to do this before God. You say, well, I may miss an opportunity. I may not be perfect. That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking you, will you walk away from here today challenged to choose holiness over happiness? Every single time. That's what we want, right? But if we'll start by accepting this challenge, God will change the course of our life. And can I tell you, I would rather be like Samuel, living in the presence of God, than to be like the sons of Eli, who were rejected by God. Hello? I would rather have the provision of God, the power of God, the presence of God, than to be living for all this world has to offer, because all that this world has to offer is temporary things. And our God is eternal, and so are we. Right? So I'm going to ask this. Are all of our students up here? Did some of them skip out because they couldn't accept the challenge? I'm just curious. We got everybody? All right, so I'm going to ask those of you who would be willing to come and to pray for them, why don't y'all kind of scatter out and spread out this time. I know you're used to taking pictures and stuff, but if you'll spread out here, I'm going to ask that all of you that are willing to come, y'all come on up, and we're going to pray over them as students. Everybody stand. All right, we'll just start there. And now those that want to move, go ahead and come on up. We're going to surround them. Come on up.